We're going to take calls this hour with Doug Fine as we talk about his work, The American Hemp Farmer, and we'll take your calls in just a moment. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you along with Doug Fine. Doug, the hemp business, it was the fastest growing industry to ever hit $1 billion of annual revenue in North America. Was that primarily from small hemp farmers, or were large corporations involved in that too?
A split. At this point, the independent hemp farmer is the largest single sector of the economy, pretty much close to 50% of it. But Big Ag is definitely interested in moving in. The good news, too, is that there's a huge room for growth. There was a Canadian study about the U.S. hemp market a couple years ago that found that fewer than 1% of American homes have any hemp products in them at all. So there's 99% of households to get to on a large room for growth.
What would you recommend to people who want to get started in a small way growing their own?
A couple of things. First off, have a long-term game plan. It's not a one-year, million-dollar crop you're going to cash out and be done. It's hard work. Secondly, you're not just a farmer, you're an entrepreneur. Farmers used to be able to harvest, drop it off. Maybe they got ripped off by the middleman, but at least they were done for the winter. Now, you harvest that crop, you got to bottle it, you got to brand it, you got to figure out what you are doing in hemp that's better and different. Here in New Mexico, my colleague Lou Siebinger markets green chili hemp. In Hawaii, they've got macadamia nut hemp CBD. So you figure out what your brand is, what you do different, and if you stick at it and really hustle, I think you got a chance to make a good living.
Let's take some calls here for you. June in Ohio to get us started. June, welcome to the program. You're on with Doug Fine.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
You guys had a question about the corn. It's just like the hemp. It has different days during of growth or grow time, usually 90 to 120 days, depending on what you're growing. But my question was, I inherited my dad's farm, and I'm trying to keep it so I can pass it forward. I was kind of forced to put in hardwood trees on the one side, but I have about 30 acres of tillable land. Does hemp grow better in muck or sand and clay? What type of soil is best?
Excellent question. It's a pretty forgiving crop, and it's a reason why people call it weed. If you know how to farm, it will come up. The stronger the soil is, the better the crop's going to be, even though it will handle struggling soil. And first and foremost, it's going to like a loam or a clay best because it doesn't want wet feet after germination. It does want to be moist at that magic moment where the seed meets the soil and the seed sprouts. But from there, through what they call the vegetative phase of hemp before it starts flowering, it doesn't want or need too much water. I've made the mistake as a rookie, which is, you care so much about it, you've got access to water, you overwater. People tend to overwater. So I would say if you're going to go one way or the other, I would say drier soil is better.
So hemp is pretty hardy, though, Doug, right?
Extremely. It's unbelievable what you'll see. In my Vermont crops, we've had not light frost, we've had hard frost before harvest. We've had hail come in, make a portion of the crop horizontal. You think, oh, my gosh, it's done. And then, boom, it bounces back up. It is one of the hardier crops I've ever seen.
You ever see the day that a grocery store, a chain-type grocery store, will be selling hemp products?
Yeah, well, they already are selling the hemp seed, the food. You will find that if you walk in, forget about, an organic market or a
right, food, just a regular big chain.
Yeah. Like you could go to, if it's okay to mention brands, if you can go into a Costco today, they will have hemp product in there today, hemp seed product. Probably they'll have CBD. I think we're going to have the McHemp sandwich at the fast food in a couple of years.
Interesting. Or a burger that looks like a real hamburger, but it's made out of hemp or something like that.
I know I like to make pancakes out of the protein meal that comes out of the seed.
Do you like the taste?
I love it. You know, it's a nutty flavor, and it's different than anything else, but I personally love it.
Let's go to James in Mississippi. Welcome to the show. First-time caller. Hi, James.
Hi. Thanks for having me on, Mr. Norrie.
Sure thing, sir.
I wanted to ask, I'm a person with Asperger's, and I've noticed that, lately, you know, I've been having some, you know, issues, you know, dealing with sensory overload, you know, all of that. It's basically a staple of that. But I found that, you know, hemp and cannabis has really, like, helped me come into my own lately. You know, I've been on top of my game, and I just wanted to know if there were any, like, specific studies talking about the benefits for people with Asperger's.
Anything that specific out there, Doug?
What a great question. I do not know the answer specifically with regard to Asperger's. I would say be a wise surfer. You know, if you're looking online, making sure that your sources are legit. But there is probably research out there. And the important thing too to remember about any plant and herb, any Chinese practitioner, for instance, Chinese medicine practitioner will tell you, everybody's body's different. So let's say, not speaking directly to Asperger's. Let's talk about. I happen to know my friend Janelle Ralph, since James is calling from the South, and Mississippi is coming online as a hemp state. But one of the bigger states in the South for hemp is South Carolina, and Janelle's company, Palmetto Harmony, is out of South Carolina. She started that company because her daughter, Harmony, has a condition similar to epilepsy that conventional drugs weren't helping with, and she needed to change the laws so that she could cultivate, and she was so good at it that she has a company now. And what she'll be the first to tell you is that the variety of cannabis she grows saved Harmony's life, and yet she would not go so far, I would say, that everybody who has Harmony's condition is going to have her life saved. It varies on the person. The good news is it's a safe plant. It's never been known to kill anybody. So it's worth researching, certainly, I would say, for Asperger's, but I do not know about studies.
Doug, are there any Native American stories about hemp that go way, way back?
Wow, I am so glad you asked that. I was asked to help the Colville tribe become one of the first, probably the first, modern federally permitted hemp program. There and outside of Spokane, Washington, and their tribal council was and is really behind a hemp program, and I'm really wishing them success. And when they were considering their initial product, they wound up going in a different direction, but when they were considering their initial product, they wanted to know, is there a history in their tribe documented? And at the Library of Congress, a friend of mine from another tribe, the Menominee tribe, Mark Grignon, found that, in fact, a 1901 document that showed that at least for 100 years there's been hemp cultivation in that area. It probably goes way back further, but it was a bonanza for the potential label for that package to be able to say this tribe's returning to cultivating hemp after a 100-year break.
Let's go next to Tracy, truck driving in Atlanta. Welcome to the program. Hi, Trace.
Hey, George, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, friend.
My question is, I'd like to start taking, using hemp products, but the problem with that is I'm subject to a drug test at any given moment. And not using it to get high or anything, but using it for the health side of it, If I go for a drug test and I'm using this, will it show that I'm tested positive for use of marijuana?
This is like a thousand, be batting a thousand with good questions.
Oh, they're the best. They're the best, Doug.
With seed, in other words, with the food products, the kind that George and I were talking, you can go to any supermarket in the world today, and there's going to be hemp seed oil and hemp hearts. You have no worries on that. That's fine. when you're talking about the cannabinoids, the flower products that have, let's say, CBD in it, even if they don't have THC in them, or they have federally legal amounts of THC, you could still be at risk. And this, my blood boils at this, not just because the founding fathers grew hemp, but because, in my view, if I could get on the soapbox, it is a human right to grow and eat whatever the heck you want. And there should be, it should not be allowed that there is a drug test for a completely safe, in fact, a product that probably makes you better functioning at your job. And all I can say is I feel really bad that you have to deal with that. And the good news is there's people working on this so that we are changing the way drug testing is done. New York City has eliminated all cannabis from its city worker testing programs, for instance. So we're getting there.
How close is the hemp plant from the marijuana plant? Would the average person be able to tell just by looking at the two which was which?
No, because they are the same plant, and the only difference is a bureaucratic one. In 1976, a couple of Canadian researchers, and I actually interviewed one of them for my recent book. They're decent people. In 1976, they declared, by their own words, they used the word arbitrary. We arbitrarily choose 0.3% THC definition of this new thing we're going to call hemp. And it's a ridiculous definition, a counterproductive definition, an arbitrary definition. So in the ground, you can't look at it and tell what the THC level is. That's another reason why, just for freedom reasons, I personally support all legalization of cannabis, because putting the burden on the farmer to be worried about these micro levels of THC is the last people we want to be putting the burden on. We need more farmers. But short answer to your question, George, you look at a cannabis plant in the field, you can't tell whether its THC level is high or low.
So it's the THC level that determines whether the plant is called marijuana or hemp.
That's it.
Fascinating. And if they took that out, what would we call it, hemp or marijuana? Only one wins.
I would say just call it the cannabis plant. And it's a really interesting question, because we talked a little bit about earlier, why is Chinese textiles the world leader? It's because they don't test the THC, and having what would probably be more than the U.S. definition of THC in the plant if anyone smoked it, which they're not smoking it in the flower, right? They're only using the fiber for the shirts and the pants. Those have no THC in it, but it's a stronger fiber. So THC makes no difference. That delineation, it's got to go away.
And I don't think people order pajamas from China made out of hemp and then smoke it. That doesn't happen.
No.
Let's go to JD in Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome to the program. Hi, JD.
Hi, Mr. Norrie. Thank you and all your crew for all you do.
Thank you.
A comment and two quick questions for Doug.
Okay.
Hello, Doug.
Howdy.
I'm familiar with there was a World War II poster that said, "Grow hemp for victory." And now I think someone should make a poster that says, "Grow hemp for survival." That's my comment. The two questions, I wonder, Doug, if you could expand on the phytoremediation qualities of the plant, such as why they're growing it in Chernobyl, Ukraine. And the second question is, does the hemp cannabis plant have what is the carbon dioxide to oxygen conversion ratio? If it's a
great
good,
question.
You know,
all right. Two interesting questions. Go ahead, Doug. See what you can do there.
As far as the slogan, hemp for survival, that's why I grow it. I grow it so that my family has a superfood stored, stable, shelf stable for a year. That's the number one reason why I cultivate hemp. Phytoremediation, otherwise known as soil building or soil healing, is a major, major industry, because as we touched on a little bit earlier, much of the productivity of the world's farmland has been going down through less than ideal practices that have been pushed over the last century. It increases productivity to grow just one crop year after year in an area for a period of time, but eventually the nutrients go down, and that's why plants like hemp, they phytoremediate, they do help build the soil. It's a really fascinating topic that I do cover in the book. First of all, nothing is a panacea. We can't just say, oh, it's a grow hemp and all the world's going to be healed. But this is what we do know. One peer-reviewed study that's published shows that for certain types of petroleum byproduct in the soil, without a doubt, hemp was effective at cleaning it up. A second study that's in the earlier phases shows that after one crop, hemp removed 50% of atrazine, a powerful pesticide, from soil, and after two crops, I can't remember if it was 80 or 90% of atrazine from soil. I'm proud to say that a seed variety that I've been developing here in New Mexico at New Mexico State is now being researched for potentially cleaning up soil that has uranium and other radioactive infiltration in it. So the research is relatively young, but it is underway, and it is showing effectiveness. And if you really want to be educated about it, you have to study different types of cleanup. In other words, petroleum cleanup, pesticide cleanup, radioactive cleanup. Those are all heavy metal cleanups. These are all different categories that require different studies, and they are all underway. And I do not know the answer to the second question about the carbon dioxide to oxygen transfer. I'll look it up after the show because I'm interested, but I don't know the answer.
And I would guess it would be the same as marijuana because it's almost the same thing, huh? Most likely.
Probably, yep.
Most likely, indeed. Let's take one more quick call before the break. Lynn in Vancouver, Canada. Hey, Lynn, go ahead.
Thanks, George, for taking my call.
Welcome.
And thank you, Doug, and congratulations on finally getting hemp legalized this way. just a couple of quick shout-outs and then a question. The first is a shout-out to the Hemp Canada gang, all the people that worked tirelessly to get it legalized here. Way back, I guess it was 97. Another shout out to Jack Harar. I know he's passed away. He's the author of The Emperor Wears No Clothes, but I'd like to think he's right now dancing his hemp pants off in heaven for joy. And here's my question. How hardy is hemp in regards to the concern? Like, is it strong enough to combat contamination from GMO crops? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks so much.
That's a difficult, I would guess, Doug, to ascertain.
Yes. The atrazine cleanup that we talked about a little bit touches on it a little bit in that it's one pesticide that hemp is being, in some preliminary studies, shown to be very effective in cleaning up. But if we're talking about, say, for instance, glyphosate, which is a really commonly used pesticide on GMO crops, I don't know that there's any studies on it yet. But I do know that some farmers, actually in the Canadian prairie provinces, it's good to have a call from Canada. You're absolutely right. We owe a lot of thanks to Canadian farmers and Canadian policymakers because they did get it legalized in 96. And I joke, my family's hemp intake used to bankroll the Canadian prairie economy net before we started growing it ourselves because we eat so much hemp.
Well, there are great neighbors, Douglas. There are great neighbors indeed. We're going to come back and take final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. How to stay positive during tense times. Eldon Taylor joins us next hour. Boy, do we all need that, huh? Stay powered and stay focused, and you'll be very, very positive. We're going to come back in a moment with final calls with our special guest, Doug Fine, as we talk about his latest work, American Hemp Farmer. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, back with our final segment with Doug Fine and your final calls. Doug's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com, dougfine.com, F-I-N-E. Doug, years ago when you started into this, how did you get interested? What was that catalyst for you?
Well, I had I live in this real remote ranch in New Mexico, super quiet, nothing. There's an extra roadrunner in the driveway, you notice it. And one day, I'm coming home from town, and there's 100 guys with earpieces and automatic weapons in the creek bed. And I'm thinking, this is weird. I look up in the sky. I feel like I'm in Goodfellas. There's helicopters. There's planes circling. And what it was my closest neighbor, I mean, not really even in shouting distance, but my closest neighbor, a retiree from a corporate job and a veteran, was self-medicating through a few cannabis plants. I can't remember how many, 9, something like that.
Yeah.
Retiree. And bottom line, someone had a personal beef with them, and our millions of taxpayer dollars went into bringing this otherwise law-abiding, tax-paying guy into a federal facility where his lawyer, since he was lucky enough to have dough, bailed him out. No one ever, went to jail for this. It was just a crazy waste of taxpayer money, and it brought danger to my family in the forms of what if they got the address wrong?
Oh, God.
And came to my house. And this fellow, by the way, is a totally legal cannabis cultivator today. But it started me along the lines of saying, we can't let this war on cannabis go on. It does way too much damage. When we look at it, George, from a high altitude, the 77 years that cannabis was prohibited is a blip in the 8,000 years that humanity has been cultivating this plant.
That's amazing. It really is. And you've never looked back, have you?
No, and it's taught me about plants. I've always been kind of more of an animal guy. I love dogs and my goats. My family, if the goats are being a pain on the milking stand and I'm not the one milking them, they can get me because, But so this has taught me about really how smart plants really are, and I've been on a real learning curve about that.
Let's go to Jeff, Cleveland, Ohio. Welcome to the program. Hey, Jeffrey.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call. I can't believe I got in. I've been trying for months.
I'm glad you made it.
Yeah, me too, especially tonight, because I got a comment, and I was thinking about a question that popped into my head while I was on hold.
Okay.
First of all, I think that hemp is one of the most utile plants on this entire planet, and I think it could go a long way towards solving the problems that we have with climate, because if you grow hemp, then it's got one of the strongest fibers to make paper out of, and if you're making paper out of it, you don't have to chop down trees to make paper, and then you can regrow the forest to suck the CO2 out of the air and pump more oxygen in. Textile-wise, hemp fibers are one of the most strong fibers for clothing that you can get outside of expensive linens and cottons. And so there's that. The food, you've already discussed that. Fuel. Instead of turning corn crops into ethanol, you can turn the hemp plants into ethanol, turn the corn crops back into food and feed crops for livestock, and save a hell of a lot of money that way, and get the food prices down all across the board. So through all of those things, I think that we could go a long way towards saving this planet. And my question is this. How can those erstwhile farmers out there grow hemp to the point where it doesn't create too high of a THC level so that it doesn't become marijuana so that they can legally grow it? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Interesting question, Doug.
Yep. On the textiles, by the way, I am wearing hemp right now. This is what they call maybe too much information. Even my underwear is made out of hemp, so it's for sure a great crop for textiles. The reality check on textiles is it takes a lot of acreage to grow for fiber products, so this is not – you can't really start a textile industry on the small acreage independent farmer model that I've been talking about and writing about, but if folks got together on large acreage in the heartland, it's doable. As far as the THC thing goes, what I'd rather see is nobody – I call it THC irrelevance until the retail level. Nobody should be worried, least of all the farmer, about the THC level in their crop. The only time that THC should matter is if a product is going – and that's a flower product, because the THC only lives in the flower. It doesn't live in the seed, which is what we eat. It doesn't live in the fiber, which is what we wear or make into bioplastics that we're talking about. It only lives in the flower. So the flower product, if it's going to go to the public in a retail manner, sure, a state can say, hey, if it's over whatever amount, it's got to be regulated for adult use. Other than that, it should be nobody's business. But the truth is if we relax THC laws and people who are growing for hemp, for these applications that we're talking about here, the most that you would ever see would be in the 1-3% THC that of the flower. Like in the, so there's no secret marketing of a flower. Oh, I'm claiming to grow hemp and I'm really growing psychoactive cannabis. That would never happen because in the dispensaries, it's at 15, 20, 25%. They'd laugh at you if you brought in a 3% THC product to them. So the reality is we got to take the burden off farmers by making THC nobody's business until it gets to the retail level.
It's like non-alcoholic beer, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
And can you measure as a farmer your THC level, or do you have to send it to a lab?
You can. For they're not hugely expensive. Something like $700, you can get kind of a handheld field model. And $700 might sound like a lot, but $100 per test is cheap when you're sending it to a lab. Plus, there's a delay. You know, you
right.
Send it off if you've got a good relationship. So it's a worthwhile investment now for farmers if to consider investing in a field model. But what, you know, the real goal is just don't even make farmers worry about it anymore.
Right. But how much would that $700 product tester last? A long time?
They're pretty new, so I don't know about their durability. And then there's also questions about accuracy because it's not as sophisticated a device as you're going to see in a lab, but it gives you a rough idea. And the few people I know who have tried them say, yeah, you know, it's pretty accurate. So, but durability is an excellent question because it's newly marketed.
Let's go back to our Canadian neighbors in Vancouver, Canada. Craig's with us. Hi, Craig.
Hi, George. Second call from Vancouver. We love you up here.
Well, I love Vancouver. Beautiful place. We did a couple live shows there over the years. Great people.
Yeah, yeah. Doug, I'm wondering, this question has been burning me for a while. I'm wondering if food farmers realize they can make more money growing hemp and flipped over from, say, growing corn. Wouldn't that put a lot of pressure on the food system?
It's an excellent question. To some degree, it would be a good problem to have to have to address because of how much better hemp is for soil than what we today call conventional corn. And I support, by the way, all farmers in corn and every crop. So when I'm saying corn grown what we today call conventionally can be hard on soil, this is not to besmirch the hardworking people that grow it. It's just, you know, you can't deny what it does. But hemp's got a long way to go. We talked a little bit about it earlier in the show. You've got, you know, 80-plus million acres in the U.S., and I'm sure many millions more north of the border up your way of corn. And although hemp is rapidly increasing in acreage, we're only at about 500,000. So we're at what you'd consider a novelty niche crop at this point, and we're a decade or more away from doing what I hope happens, which is challenging the acreage of corn and soy. But I think it would be a good problem to have if hemp were really a staple crop at the level of corn and soy. Any disruption of that level, you're right, there would be issues that would have to be addressed. But I personally will go on the record saying I think it'd be worth it because of how healthy hemp is and how good it is for soil.
Well, then what would happen, of course, is if there's any shortage of corn and soy, those prices would go back up again and farmers would rush to that again.
Absolutely.
Let's go next to whose turn is it? It is Curtis, truck driving in Barstow, California. Hey, Curtis, go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
My question is, I hold livestock for a dairy, a huge dairy company, and would it be good product to green chop and feed back to the cattle like we do with corn and hay and to make a silage out of it?
Did you get that, Doug?
Yeah, I did, and that it's like we've touched on just about every topic on hemp tonight now that we've gotten to the livestock question. So when I was researching my earlier book, Hempbound, I interviewed the researchers in Canada who had done a peer-reviewed double-blind study showing that live chickens fed hemp feed rather than corn feed produced eggs that were higher in beneficial omega fatty acids. In other words, if you feed your chickens hemp, you eat a healthier egg. That's documented. Without getting into, I could go on and on and on these stories, but a cattle farmer told me before, she was 80 when she told me this story. Before Prohibition, she knew it was planting season because hemp went in first because its roots helped prevent flooding from their irrigation ditches. But she knew it was the end of the season because they finished their cattle as a competitive advantage. They finished their cattle on hemp, and nothing fattened them up or made them healthier than hemp. And this is recognized all over. So there is a movement on right now called the Hemp Feed Coalition that is working to get what they call GRAS certification. Ironically, it stands for Generally Regarded as Safe certification. We have it for human food, but we're still working towards it for animal feed, for commercial animal feed. Now, I feed my personal goats hemp all the time because they love it, and I think it makes healthier milk. But if I were to sell that milk, that's not legal everywhere yet. And I don't. I only use the milk for my own family. So we are working towards that, and the short answer is it is going to be a huge marketing boon when people say we feed our hogs hemp. That's going to be a big thing in the near future.
Walter's in Pennsylvania. Hey, Walt. Go ahead.
Hi, George. It's always great to talk to you once again, buddy. George, I'm a libertarian sort of guy. As you know, if somebody wants to grow pot in their backyard, that's their business. If somebody wants to turn corn mash into a moonshine, I think it should be allowed. Now, as far as the hemp goes, the naysayers are going to say, well, pot is a gateway drug. It's going to lead to heroin and death and whatnot. But as I was telling Tom, Coca-Cola started out based on the coca plant. It originally contained cocaine.
That's right. A little dab will do you.
Now, if somebody wants to come up, let's say somebody started a cannabis cola company, and it would inevitably contain a trace of THC, tetrahydroxycannabinol. Well, if they would legalize cannabis cola, should the Coca-Cola company be permitted to put cocaine back in the Coca-Cola?
Well, cocaine is illegal. That's the thing. Hemp is not. Go ahead, Doug.
Evidently, Coke is researching a Coke CBD product. They've called people that I know to ask what kind of acreage would be involved to supply a Coke CBD line. So the what comes around goes around. As far as Gateway goes, there's if folks are interested, do a little online sleuthing. Hemp has been researched for actually helping people break opiate and alcohol addiction.
And here's the key to this: it's not a gateway based on the addiction. If anything, the person who has tried it decides to personally experiment with other things, but the pot itself does not force him to do that. Would you agree with that, Doug?
I would. That's why the false correlation was happening during the height of the Nancy Reagan drug war, because it was the type of person who might be a rebel or a risk taker that wants to try anything, right? But for many people, I would say probably including myself, I've never even tried cocaine or anything like that, and never want to. But I do like cannabis, and never have had a desire to try anything else.
American Hemp Farmer, where do people get the book, Douglas?
Thank you so much for asking, George, and for this incredibly great show. It's available everywhere. Maybe the easiest place to find the book, ebook, and audiobook links is at my website, dougfine.com.
What's your next project, Douglas?
Right now I'm working on a TV show based on the book of the same name. It's called American Hemp Farmer. And what I'm doing is profiling real-life Americans, and actually folks all over the world, who are trying to make a go of it, actually to save their ranches and their farms all over through the comeback of the hemp plant.
When? What are the odds of that TV show happening?
There's interest. You know, it's a hard thing. I don't live in Hollywood, and I'm not pounding the pavement, but I've teamed up with a fellow named Andrew D'Angelo, who founded one of the legendary early dispensaries in California, and he's out of that business now, and he's producing the show with me, and we're doing our best to get it picked up, so I'm cautiously optimistic.
Super. Good luck on that, Doug. Up next, Eldon Taylor joins us. He's going to keep us positive. Right.